Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Good morning, everyone. This is Vicki Dobbs coming to you live with Kindred Spirits around the world. I'm the founder of Wisdom Evolution and the You First Revolution, encouraging you to put you at the top of your priority list, to choose you first because hashtag you matter. Please pop on over to my website at VickiDobbs.com to find more about the programs I offer and sign up for my Friday Wisdom Whispers newsletter. You'll always find a free gift for my audience, a printable journal just for you listeners who love to take notes, record those aha moments or questions, even write down those little whispers of wisdom that float by on the wind. I'd love to have you join our circle of support. Choosing you first is not a selfish act. It's an act of self-preservation that allows you to gift the world the best of you, not just what is left of you. And today, I'm excited to introduce to you my very special guest, Dr. Jose Luis Stevens. Jose is president and co-founder with his wife Lena of PowerPath Seminars and School of Shamanism, an international school and consulting firm dedicated to the study and application of shamanism and indigenous wisdoms for businesses and everyday life. In 1983, he completed his doctoral dissertation at the California Institute for Integral Studies, focusing on the interface between shamanism and the Western psychological counseling world. Since then, he studied cross-cultural shamanism around the world to distill the core elements of shamanic healing and practice. As an international lecturer and consultant, he's worked with a huge range of individuals and businesses to help them discover their most effective path of service and success. He's the author of numerous articles and more than 20 books, including the one we'll talk about today, The Shaman's Book of Extraordinary Practices, and one I really loved listening to this last week in Audible, How to Pray the Shaman's Way. Welcome, Dr. Stevens. We are so grateful to have you here.
So happy to be here.
So shall we just jump right in on questions, or have you got something you'd like to say to folks up front?
Oh, we can jump into questions. That's what where the most information comes out of anyway.
All right. Well, I know one of the first questions you probably get asked everywhere you go is, what is shamanism and what are shamanic practices? How would you explain this, not just to your students and listeners, but to our listeners, both experienced and new to this concept?
That's actually a very interesting question because, shockingly, many people don't know what a shaman is. They don't know what shamanism is. Maybe they never even heard of the term. And so I have to answer this question quite often, actually. And I say shockingly because it is the world's oldest spiritual practice. It's been around, documented now for about 70,000 years and keeps getting pushed back, you know, so more and more evidence is showing up earlier and earlier in our history. It's cross-cultural, so it's practiced all over the world and, has ancient origins in every continent. And, even though it's found in every continent and the northern and southern hemispheres, it has very similar practices, even though maybe locally there are details that are different. It's basically very similar. And it's the world's oldest spiritual tradition, but it's way more than that, because it's actually a system of survival. I go so far as to say that without shamanism, the human race probably wouldn't have survived. So it's all important in terms of our history and where we've come in all this time. And I'll give you some examples to illustrate that. So shamans were the first people who could, for example, they developed skills at predicting the weather. So they could know what kind of a winter was coming up, and they would be able to inform their people where would be the best place to spend the winter, so they wouldn't be caught in deep snows and icy cold and that sort of thing. They knew where the herds were, and so they could tell the local hunters where they would find the hunting grounds, because sometimes that was difficult. When you're out in open spaces, you don't know whether to go north or south or east or west to find those herds. But the shamans tuned in, and they knew, and saved a lot of difficulty that way. They were also well-trained in medical practices. So they discovered how to set bones. They discovered how to reduce fevers by using certain plants, local plants. They were actually plant experts. And the way shamans talk about it, they discovered what the medicine of the plants were by simply talking to the plants and asking them what their specific benefits were. And then they would apply those plants, and sure enough, they would get results. So they were doctors, they were psychologists, they were storytellers, they were ceremonialists, they were artists, trained often in local types of martial arts, so they had good training in fighting skills, and they were also often the chief of their tribe, or they occupied a position of authority, they were considered to be somebody that was all important to the tribe. So they had important positions in their tribe. And unfortunately, early anthropologists didn't understand shamanism and thought that they were kind of just crazy and psychotic. And so a lot of people got that idea that they were just crazy people, but they were far from crazy. They were very advanced in their understanding of the way the world works. And even though there's been attempts by various religions and political movements to get rid of them, for example, Hitler tried to kill every shaman that they could find. Catholic Church did the same thing. They have survived to this day, and even though their numbers are diminished because of the way we live in the world today, you still find shamans all over the world and practicing the way they've always practiced, with new skills, of course. So, I mean, I could go on and on, but I think maybe that sort of, gives a sense of what shamanism is all about.
Would it be fair to say in the modern world, those who want to deal with these extraordinary practices you lay out in your book, that as you become more adept with the work, it becomes a way of life? It's not a religion. It's not a cult per se. It's not sorcery. It's simply a nature-based way for you to connect with your own intuitive nature and with all of the seen and the unseen in the world around you. It's a way of life.
That's entirely accurate. And that's That's exactly what it is. And it's based a lot on intuition. Our world today, we've really relied a lot on rationality. And in some ways, we've become very abstract from nature, and we study it, from the eyes of a scientist. And scientists are often used to classifying and dividing up everything into smaller units. But shamans are good at seeing the whole. You know, how does the weather interact with the biosphere? And how is everything connected? How is the moon involved? How is the sun involved? How are the planets involved? So they're seeing the unified whole. And there's a great need for that, because you can miss a lot by dividing everything up and going in in fine detail and not seeing the connections anymore.
Yeah, putting all of this knowledge in boxes, creating the separation that keeps us disconnected from the beautiful changing leaves on the trees or a conversation with a rock.
Absolutely.
So how did you come to know shamanism as a way of life and learning for you? And how did you get acquainted with these transformative practices you give us in this book?
Well, it actually goes all the way back to my earliest childhood. I'm 76 years old now, so that was quite a while ago. I'm Mexican-American. My mother was Mexican. My father was American. And my mother was from Guadalajara, Mexico. And my grandmother was raised in a hacienda. So they had some money. And in the haciendas, they're usually the servants at that time were almost always indigenous people. And so she was raised actually by indigenous people, even though she, you know, was living in this hacienda. And so she learned a lot about their ways and their practices, their methods of healing and all kinds of things. So when I was a small child, she lived with us. My grandmother lived with us, and she would pass all that information on to me. And I just enjoyed immensely sitting at her knee, so to speak, and listening to all these fabulous stories from old Mexico. And so that became a very, very important part of my formative years. And I, of course, went on to conventional education, Catholic schools, and high school, university, and graduate school. But somehow these stories always stayed with me. And so when I got to graduate school, I pursued studies in shamanism, because I was very interested in it, and began to learn in a more academic way, you could say, what I had learned from her. And that led me to meeting a very, very important meeting with a Toltec shaman from central Mexico. He was from the Wixárika tribe, which is also known as Huichol. And my wife and I both started to work with him, and we studied with him for 10 years. And that meant many, many trips down to Mexico to study with him. And he asked us not to reveal the fact that we were studying with him. And so we didn't. For 10 years, we didn't tell anybody we were studying with him, but, we did. And so that was our, you could say, our official training, our taproot. It's very important in shamanism to know what your taproot is, like whether it's, from Lapland, it's Sami taproot, or Celtic shamanism, or Andean shamanism, and in our case it was Toltec shamanism. And which is extremely rich, and I can go on and on about that, but that's the short version. And then since then, my wife Lane and I have both traveled all over the world and met shamans from widely diverse cultures, and in order to see the cross-cultural aspects, to see how their practices are similar and how they're different, and to sort of glean the most important themes in the shamanic approach to life itself.
That's fascinating. It makes me wish I was 20 years younger, because I'm the same age as you, and I could jump around and run around to all these amazing places and meet these people that have really gifted maybe the North American community, but maybe the world community with this deep understanding of who we can be if we choose to, maybe step out of the ordinary to discover the extraordinary. And I know you talked a lot about the origins of these practices, the specific ones that you have in your book, and there's 58 of them, folks. So get this book on the Shaman's Book of Extraordinary Practices, because I got to tell you, it is filled with some fabulous things that you can do that will expand your horizons. I guess that's an easy way to put it. And I'd love to chat about and introduce our listeners to some of these 58 power tools that you've included in your book, Jose. And I think one of my favorite ones, and I think you begin the book with it, is the extraordinary practice of saying hello. Is that not just so simple and yet so profound, to practice greeting the world, all of it, not just the people in it?
Well, yeah, it's one of my favorite, and I do it every day to start the day. This reminds me to say that many shamanic practices are very simple but profound, and they're also things that you might find you learn in kindergarten or in preschool. You know, taking the kids out and to say hello to the trees and hello to the sky and hello to the sun. To us, that sounds like child's play. It sounds like something that is very cute, and, you know, we expect little children to, you know, sort of like a fun for them to do. But we miss the fact how profound that is. So when you go out, this can be done any time, but I like to go out first thing in the morning when I first get up, and I go outside, no matter what the weather is, no matter what the conditions are. And I just, as I was taught, I just start saying hello to everything. But, you know, it's not just a perfunctory, hi there, hi there. It's really like, hello, and I'm so glad that you're in my world, and I bless you, and I hope that you have a wonderful day. As you know, in other words, it's like deeply personal, and it's intimate. That's the key word here, is intimate. It's not perfunctory. It's like a real connection. It could be things that you don't see, like the insects, the worms under the ground. It could be the cold air. You don't see that, but you can feel it on your skin, or the heat, or the radiance of the sun as it's coming up, or the stars as they're just fading, or it can be inanimate things that we consider to be inanimate, like rocks and even structures. Like, I say hello to my house, and I say hello to my cars, because even though they're man-made, they're artificial in that respect, they're still made of ingredients that have spirit in them. You know, every atom in the world that makes up the world, every atom, every particle was forged in a sun at some point, you know, and who knows when.
Yeah.
And those are ingredients that they have consciousness. They have aware. According to the shamanic way of looking at things, they're alive. They have consciousness. They may not be self-aware like we are, but they still have life. And so by addressing, when you address something in nature or even something that's not natural, you wake it up. That's the shamanic point of view. It's like you say hello to somebody who's sort of a little spaced out, and you watch them focus for a second, and they go, oh, hello. In other words, you catch their attention, and they wake up more. And that's the very thing that happens when you say hello to a tree, that it wakes up a little bit more. And it doesn't have eyes to see like conventionally like we do, but...
Go ahead.
The tree knows that we're there, and the tree is enhanced by our greeting it.
And I think we are, too. And when you turn around, when you get that kind of positive energy going out, it can't help but come back to you with a reciprocal greeting from all the seen and the unseen beings that you're talking to. I love this. My teacher, Lynn Andrews, used to say that, you know, you have to awaken the spirits of place wherever you are. And to let them not only know that you're there for their protection and yours, but to maybe they haven't been spoken to in centuries.
Right.
And to greet the world, the extraordinary practice of saying hello. And with that, we need to take a quick short break. So we will be back, folks. Stay with us, and we shall return.
Learning to tap into the evolution of your own wisdom is hard. Now there's a place you can go to find resources to do just that. VickiDobbs.com. At VickiDobbs.com, if you sign up for her free newsletter, you'll get her Optimism by Choice and be a happy journal for free. Plus, there's lots of fun and free stuff to do at VickiDobbs.com, like sign up for her blog, Friday Food for Thought, or download her You First Journal to explore how to live an intentional life. So much to do, so little time. Visit VickiDobbs.com to get started. That's VickiDobbs.com.
Audiobooks gives you instant access to over 50,000 of the bestsellers and hottest book titles in romance, mystery, fiction, and many other genres. Just visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Audiobooks to get started.
It's time for you to read Get Off the Shelf by Vicki Dobbs. This book helps you discover how to reconnect to your dreams and actually identify yourself by what you do, not who you are. If you're looking to find what's hidden at the bottom of your heart to actualize and activate it for your highest good and purpose, then this book is for you. It all starts by helping yourself first, and Get Off the Shelf shows you exactly how to do this, and it all starts by getting Vicki Dobbs' book, Get Off the Shelf at Amazon.com, available in ebook or prints.
ASMC, the premier German company that supplies everything for adventure, from outdoor clothes to outdoor gear, even backpacks. Lots of quality and lots of specials. To start your adventure, go to HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on ASMC.
Vicki Dobbs' latest book, Wisdom and Wit, a little life book, uses a blend of ancient wisdom, modern modalities, art, and creativity so you can learn to choose what's right for you. It is designed to inspire you to think outside the box, challenge you to look beneath old layers, and leads you to mapping out your journey. Wisdom and wit, fun, and filled with information, inspiration, and affirmations. It even has journaling opportunities. Wisdom and Wit, powerful and life-changing. Get your copy today at VickiDobbs.com.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back, folks. This is Vicki Dobbs, and I am here with Jose Luis Stevens, the wonderful shaman author of the Book of Extraordinary Practices and 19 or 20 more books and some amazing articles. And I think I just want to toss in here, you mentioned something about intuition. And as I was perusing your website earlier in the week to get ready for our interview, I noticed you had a really nice article on what is intuition and what are intuitive skills. And I think this is something that as children we kind of have it blocked out when we're told that, oh, that's just your imagination or that was a dream, the kind of things that the conventional world tend to build walls around, where if we can bless the world with an understanding that everything that you imagine is real. And in my book I write, hey guys, if you think this is funny, back in the 50s, wasn't there this cartoon comic book about a detective that wore this watch that he could talk to secretly? I'll bet 90% of you look at your wrist right now and you've got a watch on that you can talk to, because at some point, somebody imagined that, and in that thought process, it became real. And I mean, there's examples of that from the book 1984 to the world that we live in today, from Ray Bradbury building a cardboard rocket ship in his backyard, and we have rockets that go to the moon and beyond. And so I'm rattling on here, but short and sweet for our audience, how would you encourage them to use their intuition, and what are these intuitive skills? Because aren't they really the key to a shamanic practice?
Yeah, absolutely. This is a really good question. It's a big one, so we can't possibly go into all the nuances of it, but you know, there are many ways of being intuitive. There's clairaudience, there's, like, you know, you hear a voice, or you get a message in your a thought, maybe in your head, or sometimes it comes in the form of, like, seeing symbols in your environment, so it's more visual. So there's many, many different ways that it shows up for different people, and not everybody has them all, and so you have to learn what your skills are. Now, I'm very clairaudient, so I get messages in my head but I'm also, like, visual too, so I often will get a red light or a green light depending on whether I should do something or shouldn't do something, and I rely on these tools all the time. And the reason that I started relying on them so much is that I was fortunate enough earlier in my life that I really got whacked up the side of the head, so to speak, with the fact that there were several times when if I hadn't followed my intuition, I'd be dead. And so it really got my attention that following my intuition saved my life. And so that really helped me. And now I trust it implicitly. And I have to say, it's 100% accurate. Like, I never go wrong when I use it. The mistake I make sometimes, like everybody, is that, I forget to use it.
Right, right. I think that very much like you, I hear things. One of my fun examples is I was trying to build a place for water to live near my house. So I put the wire down and I got the cement bags out and I read the bag, and I poured cement with my dad when I was a kid. So I'm like, okay, where's the instruction? How much actual cement goes with how much sand and how much water? Well, there were no instructions. And I'm like, just out of my mouth, I say, okay, Daddy, I need help with this. And boom, there was like this 7-to-1 pops into my head. And I got stuck along the side of the road one time in a 4-wheel drive vehicle with the left side in a ditch. And I didn't think to get out and lock the hubs and put it in four-wheel drive. That's not where my brain was. My brain was, I'm stuck in this ditch. And Daddy's voice popped in and said, rocket, Vicky. I'm like, rocket? Yeah, you put it in drive, hit the gas. Put it in reverse, hit the gas. Put it in drive, hit the gas.
Yeah.
And I, mud flying everywhere, I rocked myself out of that ditch. And I think those are the kind of stories that we need to share with the world and let them know that those things that they hear are their intuition, are the are helping spirits, the beings that surround us and love us, that just keep us moving forward in this life. And I thank you for this article on intuition, and it's just really, it's one of those things I think that it would be great for more people to talk about and to encourage our kids and our grandkids. You know, let's go back to playing with cardboard boxes and turning them into castles.
Yeah. Well, this
I'm a grandma. I want kids to do something that's non-electronic.
Yeah.
So, go ahead.
Well, this topic of, like, intuition is related to another practice in the book, which is about asking for help. You know, we're so proud, and we're so, you know, sometimes just we just don't think of it, that we don't ask for help nearly as much as we need to. Now, part of the shamanic tradition is that you always ask for help. Of course, you always ask for help. If you're going to go on a hunt, you call in your allies. You call in your helping spirits. That's going to help you to come home with some game or plants that you've gathered or whatever. It's just not even heard of that you would try to go without your allies and try to go do something without your helping spirits. Help is everywhere. Help is all around us. Help is available constantly. And yet we, in our culture, kind of regard that as like a weakness almost. Like, I don't need to ask for help here. I need to do this all myself to prove that I can do it. But that's absolutely foolish. Because, you know, the personality is not designed to really solve all the problems that we face. In fact, the personality is very weak in terms of solving problems. The problem most people solve by getting help, but they don't realize they're getting the help.
Right.
You know,
they're not listening.
Everybody has allies. Everybody has helping spirits that are constantly guiding them and helping them through life, and they don't even get acknowledged.
So that's a good one for y'all to look up when you get the book, folks, is practice, the extraordinary practice of asking for help. And when we come back, I want to talk about the extraordinary practice of dissolving fear. So hang in there with us, folks. We'll be back right after these important messages.
It's time for you to read Get Off the Shelf by Vicki Dobbs. This book helps you discover how to reconnect to your dreams and actually identify yourself by what you do, not who you are. If you're looking to find what's hidden at the bottom of your heart to actualize and activate it for your highest good and purpose, then this book is for you. It all starts by helping yourself first, and Get Off the Shelf shows you exactly how to do this, and it all starts by getting Vicki Dobbs' book, Get Off the Shelf at Amazon.com, available in ebook or print.
Reach your health and fitness goals. Whether you want to lose weight, learn to dance, build muscle, or just live healthy, Beachbody gives you unlimited access to the nation's most popular fitness and weight loss solutions. Visit our advertiser page and click on Beachbody now.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome. Welcome back, everybody. This is Vicki Dobbs, your host, and I'm here with Jose Luis Stevens, and we're talking about extraordinary practices. And in this one, I think it's really important today, Jose, for you to share with us the extraordinary practice of dissolving fear.
Wow, that's a big one. There's actually a variety of ways of dissolving fear. First, let me say that fear is the greatest challenge for human beings that there is. There is no greater obstacle to our happiness and to our forward progress and evolution than fear, because fear comes from a sense of separation from spirit. That's where it originally comes from. And religion kind of talks about it in terms of the fall of man and, you know, all of that. But, you know, I prefer the shamanic view of it, which is that fear is a result of feeling separate from nature, feeling separate from ourselves, feeling separate from other people. And so fear begets more fear. So if you decide to walk the path of fear, you're only going to become more fearful and more fearful and more fearful until you end up paranoid or, you know, somebody that's just completely immersed in conspiracy theories. And it's a miserable way to live. It's extremely painful. It's a lot of suffering involved. So it's critical that we know how to dissolve fear. There's a variety of different ways to dissolve fear. One of the ways to dissolve fear is to, and this is using terminology that comes from many different backgrounds, like theosophy and so on. It's often referred to as going to the upper room. Now, the upper room is a reference to the third ventricle in the brain. The third ventricle in the brain is pretty much smack dab in the middle of your brain, between the tips of your ears and your third eye on the back of your head. If you were to draw cross lines there, that's where it would be. It would be right below the pineal gland, right above the pituitary gland, right where the optic nerve goes through, where the hippocampus is. All the most important structures of the brain are in that vicinity. So it's a key place in the brain. And it's been referred to by all the different traditions. Like, for example, the Hindus call it the cave of Brahma, and the Christians call it the kingdom of heaven. And it's been referred to as the mansion by the Visharaka people, or the El Templo by tribes in the Amazon, and so on. So they're all talking about the same thing. The Buddha called it emptiness, the place of emptiness. So the ventricle itself is just the place where cerebral spinal fluid flows through the brain, taking away toxins and bringing in nutrients. But it's symbolically, it represents a portal into a higher state of consciousness, what they refer to as a higher octave. Now, most of us live within a lower octave. You know, that's our range is in this one octave. But there's a higher octave that's available to us that usually only great saints and enlightened people, find. But it's available to all of us. And so if you go to that third ventricle place, and you can use your powers of visualization there. You can imagine that it's like a little room, like a little cave maybe, with a comfortable armchair in there. And you can just sit there. Just going there is very liberating and feels good. It always feels good. I've never known it to feel bad. And from there, you can just rise up a little bit. And as you rise up a little bit, you can roll your eyes up, which helps some. And you go into, this is hard to describe because everybody sees it differently, but it's usually a very brightly lit space, a place that has no objects in it, There's no ceiling, there's no walls, there's no furniture. It's just space, huge space with bright, bright light. So if you try to bring your fears up into that space, you won't be able to do it. Because fear is a lower vibration. It doesn't, it cannot exist there. It dissolves. So it's a perfect place to erase or dissolve the kinds of fears that you might have. Maybe you have a fear of heights. Maybe you have a fear of speaking in public. Maybe, you know, people have all kinds of fears. All you have to do is bring those things, you picture them, you picture your fear. So I'm going to bring this fear up into that third ventricle area. And I'm just going to be with it. And within a very short time, and I'm talking about seconds, you won't be able to feel the fear anymore. And by the way, that's not temporary. That is a way of clearing fears permanently. And most people don't believe it because it seems too simple. But most shamanic practices are very simple.
When you create that void, when you let go of that fear of heights or whatever, do you have a practice to refill that void so that fear can't come back? Or have you truly exploded it, for lack of a better word, and sent it on its way by bringing it into this upper room?
Yeah, you did the latter. You've permanently exploded it. And now, it's always a good idea to spend a little time in that upper octave place just to sort of allow it to sort of take over that space that was occupied formerly by some fear.
Beautiful.
You know, it's just kind of like taking a good shower.
Right.
A light shower, so to speak. This is a very, very ancient technique, by the way, and it's known around the world. So it's interesting that something so simple can be so powerful and so profound, could save people millions of dollars in therapy bills, and yet
and it's changed the world.
Not known. Nobody knows about it.
Yeah.
Probably because you can't charge for it, you know?
I think that's something that I know I'll try to talk about more and reread that chapter, because as you explain it, the practice is so simple. And with other teachers that I've worked with, we've often talked about this type of thing, but never with the simplified definition and yet the scientific explanation of what this actually entails. I know I'm excited to look into it. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the extraordinary practice of the inner smile. This is Vicki Dobbs here with Jose Luis Stevens, and we'll be back in a few.
Tap into the evolution of your own wisdom through Vicki Dobbs' personal stories and resources at her website, VickiDobbs.com. A spiritual entrepreneur, teacher, coach, and storyteller, Vicki shows you how you're not alone in this busy world and that you can carve out time for yourself and not feel selfish. Discover the ultimate sharing of magic and mystery that is within you if you dare to say yes to yourself, to living intentionally in your own power. If this sounds good to you, find out more now at VickiDobbs.com. You'll be glad you did. VickiDobbs.com.
Discover the world's largest anti-aging organization, Life Extension. For the best information, vitamins, and supplements, you just can't beat Life Extension. To start extending your life, go to the HealthyLife.net advertiser page and click on the Life Extension banner.
Tap into the evolution of your own wisdom through Vicki Dobbs' personal stories and resources at her website, VickiDobbs.com. A spiritual entrepreneur, teacher, coach, and storyteller, Vicki shows you how you're not alone in this busy world and that you can carve out time for yourself and not feel selfish.
Discover the ultimate sharing of magic and mystery that is within you if you dare to say yes to yourself, to living intentionally in your own power. If this sounds good to you, find out more now at VickyDobbs.com. You'll be glad you did. VickyDobbs.com.
If you're looking for unique items at affordable prices, then you should try Dream Product. From apparel to beauty, from shoes to therapeutic relief products, visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Dream Products, and maybe your dreams might just come into reality.
Where positive people and radio unite. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back, everybody, for our last session with the wonderful shaman Jose Luis Stevens. And I'd love to talk about this one because it brings a smile to my face every time I talk about it. You share in your book that the ancient Taoist shamans of China understood the power of a smile. Would you talk to us a little bit about the extraordinary practice of the inner smile?
Absolutely. Let me start by just saying that some of the practices in the book, they don't obviously have, like, shamanic roots that you can see. So, for example, the inner smile is often taught by the Buddhists. It's a Buddhist practice. It's known as a Buddhist practice. But since shamanism predated Buddhism, for example, the Tibetan Buddhist practice Bonpo, which was a shamanic practice, and then Buddhism came to them, and they simply adopted it and wove it together with their shamanic practices, and there you have it. So some of the practices are Taoist, some of the practices are from other traditions, but if you go back far enough, you'll always find that they have shamanic roots. So the inner smile is one of those, and it's a practice of neutrality. So that's a little bit hard to define for most people, because people think of neutrality as boring or dull or not interesting, or, you know, they'd rather have drama. And yet drama yes. is what's behind most of our suffering, you know? So
yeah.
In the shamanic practice, neutrality is absolutely vital to be able to break free, as they call it. Break free, which is also a Buddhist notion, and some other traditions include it too. It's like breaking free of the trap of being in a separate body, personality, and facing the world all alone, and realizing that you're one with everything. So the inner smile is a practice which you can do in a very short period of time, and it's basically going into a meditative state and putting a very slight smile for no reason, by the way. You just put a smile on your face for no reason. And it's not a huge grin. It's just like the Mona Lisa type smile, you know? And then you begin to think of things. Like maybe you start out easy. You think of like maybe your dog. Or your cat. Maybe you think of your children. Or you think of your family members or friends. In other words, things that are easy to smile about. And yeah, that feels great and everything. But little by little, you move over to things that are a little bit less pleasant. That are a little bit more challenging. Like, oh, homelessness. And perhaps poverty and, you know, war and whatever, some of the more difficult topics, maybe even people that you disagree with, the people that you don't like, that you feel a lot of animosity toward. You maintain the smile on your face while you contemplate these people or things or events. And after a while, after some practice, you can get over to some very difficult territory, and you maintain the smile. Now, the smile has physiological repercussions. The smile has to do with releasing endorphins. It actually impacts your nervous system. It generates a relaxation response in the body, and so on and so forth. Okay, so it's not just that you have a silly smile on your face. You're actually creating the conditions of biological transformation so that you can actually get to a more neutral place about these things. You can get beyond hate. You can get beyond fear. You can get beyond animosity or conflict. You can get beyond discomfort. Because it doesn't help to join the masses in their drama about these things. It doesn't help the poverty in the world to be in horror about poverty. That doesn't help. In fact, you can do way more about poverty if you come from a more neutral place. Then you're much more efficient. But that's another story. Okay, I'm getting off into what you can do about these things. But the practice is extremely powerful and yet incredibly simple. And all I can it's worth practicing just to see what it does for you. The proof is in the pudding, in other words.
It is, and that's what I was going to share with you. As I sat down to get ready for our interview today, I did just that, and I was so surprised at how to start with that Mona Lisa smile and just begin to feel how that more joyful energy bubbles to the surface.
Yeah.
That increased the size of my smile as I just sat with the energy of joy that was bubbling up, which then you have this grin on your face because suddenly I'm happy, and it makes the, I mean, what a great way to start the world. Even if I don't get into the things that I would like to focus on and perhaps bring a different energy to, just for myself. Like you walk out and greet the world every morning with a hello. To add that smile as I sat on the edge of the bed putting my shoes on, what a difference. To add that to walk out to the world and say hello, and it changes the day. And when you change yourself and change your day, you're changing the world.
That's right.
Everybody you meet is changed by that smile. Wow.
That's absolutely true, and it's the shamanic way is that each one of us are impacting the world at all times. The world is a mirror, and so what we put out is it's an echo chamber is also accurate, you know. It's like whatever you put out there comes back to you fairly immediately. You put out a blessing, you get blessed back. You put out a to hell with you, that's what you get back.
Yes, you do. Those who frustrate us the most are our best teachers. They're mirroring back to us something we need to work on ourselves.
Yep.
Well, I know that we're running short of time, and I just want to bring up your other book that I so enjoyed, simply because out of the blue I found it and had to make a drive yesterday, so it accompanied me along the way. And that's How to Pray the Shaman's Way. And this was really an eye-opener for me. And I know in the book we're talking about, you have a chapter and discuss the extraordinary practice of prayer. And I'm so sorry for my dog barking at us. She goes, Darby. She was asleep under the desk. Would you share more about this practice? You really opened my eyes to a new way of seeing and perceiving prayer.
Yeah, you know, prayer is not, well, most of us were taught to say rote prayers that were, you know, written a long time ago by different traditions, and we mumble those and think we're praying, but they don't really amount to much because there's no heart. You know, prayer is something of the heart. You got to feel it. And prayer, most people regard prayer as something like, you know, you're asking, you know, God's a big Santa Claus, and you're asking Santa Claus for for gifts, you know. I mean, it's kind of primitive. Or, you know, it, the old-fashioned idea of prayer is like, smite my enemies and, you know, get me to win the battle. Well, those are very primitive forms of prayer. You know, they're actually rather destructive. And little by little, as we evolve, we learn to leave that kind of praying behind. And prayer is a huge territory. It's not just asking for things. It's not just, you know, crying for help when we're desperate. Although that's not a bad time to pray.
Right.
Prayer can simply be, oh, bless this meadow. Bless these people. It can be a kind of like a command or a statement of like intention.
Yes.
You know?
Affirmative.
Yeah, affirming life, affirming health, like, thank you for making me so healthy. Thank you for all the gifts that I have in my life. Thank you. Gratitude. You know, there's three very important vibrations, gratitude, love, and awe. And by focusing on those and by being grateful, by being awestruck, by being loving, those are all prayers. You know, it's not always what we think it is, like that, you know, we're begging
right.
for something on our knees. In fact, I've never seen an indigenous person that I've worked with, a shaman, pray on their knees. They're almost always stand up straight and tall and talk to spirit from a position of, like, strength.
Yeah.
So it's like, thank you, spirit, for my life. Thank you. For this world, that you know, they're not groveling. They're not, you know, we have this strange idea of a fearsome God, you know, like, so, you know, that we have to be afraid of. That's not what Spirit wants of us at all. But Spirit doesn't want us to grovel. Spirit wants a co-partner.
Yes.
So, get off your knees. Stand up straight.
Co-create with me as me. Yes, that's a beautiful one. Well, Jose, I'm just so grateful that you came today, and I want to thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and knowledge. It's been such a joy reading through your book, the Shaman's Book of Extraordinary Practices, and listening to your book on the... Well, I'll just say The Power of Prayer. My brain short-circuited on the name of the book exactly, but...
How to Pray the Shaman's Way.
That's right, The Shaman's Way. I really learned so many fascinating things. Myriad of transformational and shamanic practices you offer. So, folks, check out Dr. Stephen's wonderful programs and get your copy of his books at powerpath.com. That's powerpath.com. And to learn more about me and the work I do in the world, check out VickiDobbs.com or find me on most social media sites at Vicki L. Dobbs. And heads up, my annual Get Ready for the Coming Year virtual get-together is all new this year. Go to VickiDobbs.com and sign up on the interest list for Thrive in 25, where we'll explore the path ahead as you look into the coming year with anticipation and a plan. This is Vicki Dobbs, founder of Wisdom Evolution, head cheerleader for the You First Revolution, reminding you that it's time for you to give yourself permission to be first in your world, to put you on your own calendar, and choose you first. You have a right to be happy. Hashtag you matter. Have a wonder-filled week traveling down happy trails till we meet again.